15 games on the schedule? Oh my God. We're going to do this thing. Welcome to Fantasy NBA Today podcast presented by Bet Online and hosted by yours truly, Aaron Brewski. And I'll be running solo. We have 15 games to cover, so we're going to get right to it. Welcome to our viewers on Twitter and on YouTube. Thank you guys for joining us and try to get into the Discord. The link is in the show notes. We've got all sorts of free content there. We got stuff for our premium subscribers. If you want to get your questions answered on air, we're going to be answering questions toward the end of this show. Covered a ton of stuff from over the weekend in the last show. I got a little extra coffee here and getting ready to go, and we're going to just blast through all of tonight's action. So much news is about to hit the wire, I'm sure. 15 games as the league takes the day off on Tuesday so everybody can go out and vote. So we will have a lot of basketball to cover. I saw a stat. It's actually inside the week ahead. It's a great article that the great Mike Passador puts together for our premium subscribers. If you want to go actually check that article out, hit the menu up in the Fantasy Pass, and you will get some great information to prepare you for this upcoming week, which it's unique. There's a lot of games this week. There's only a handful of teams that play three times. In this segment of the next 4 days, we have some teams that are playing three times, just a handful. We got Chicago playing three times, San Antonio playing three times in the upcoming week, and Washington, unfortunately, playing just once. But most teams are playing a lot of games this week. So streaming action is going to be a little tight, you know, because everybody's kind of more or less got the same schedule going on. But we will get to all of that. Also, quickly, before we get into the nuts and bolts of everything going on here, some schedule news. We're doing two episodes per day now, just really maxing it out here. We've got special segments, buy low, sell high the week ahead. Go catch that show with Panda, the aforementioned Panda. Some of the most hilarious stuff that I've heard on this show happening in that show. A great Hulk Hogan imitation. I didn't know that Panda had that in the arsenal. And again, check out his week ahead article if you're a premium subscriber here, because it really does lay out everything you need to know. And when Panda writes, you must read it because he's one of the best writers in the business. Otherwise, we'll be live every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning, noon on the East Coast, as we are right now. Just getting you guys ready. And then Doc and Rick with Sports Ethos After Dark. I don't know if we got to trademark that name, if we're going to run any issues there, but we're calling it that for now. That's live Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday as the games are ending. So those shows are off the hook. It's been great. We've got a great crew here, and I feel like we're getting you guys ready each and every day to dominate your fantasy league. So beyond that, let's get a couple bills paid with Bet Online as the world's most trusted betting platform and your number one source for online betting. From the earliest odds to live in-game betting, Bet Online provides you with all the action and the ability to watch the games as they happen. With the largest selection of odds on everything from football, NBA, NHL to entertainment and political props, head to Bet Online today to get in the action with America's most trusted site for online wagering. Bet Online. The game starts here. Okay, so we got 15 games to prepare for. So let's get right into it. We're going to start with the East Coast action instead of defaulting to the two teams that I have covered on my ESPN app here. Milwaukee at Cleveland. 1-5 Milwaukee heading to 7-0 Cleveland. The line on this game, I'm not 100% sure because it's not on screen here, but I'm very curious about what the line is on this game because I'm sure everybody's all over Cleveland at home, but this is two ships passing in the night, right? This is Milwaukee fighting sort of almost for their existence. Talked about this a lot about Milwaukee and the key cogs and really the organization at large needing to have a good start and not have things spin south and let the where's Giannis going to be playing next machine start going. And what's up with Damian Lillard at this stage of his career? They made a 2-year bet in Milwaukee, and we are into the beginning of year two at 1-5 for Milwaukee. Does this squad pull together? Does Doc Rivers have that sort of in him to pull this squad together? I don't know. I'm still looking for a line here. 6.5. 6.5. It looks like the line started at 5.5 and it's moved to 6.5 with Cleveland being the favorite team. I mean, with the way they're playing ball, I'm sure it's hard to take Milwaukee, but in terms of motivation, in terms of this being an NBA TV game, not a national, like a real true national, Cleveland might take their foot off the gas. Milwaukee playing for way more than just one game tonight. So if I'm leaning anywhere, it's Milwaukee on this line here, but it's a tough one. And as far as fantasy goes, we want to see these non-stars in Milwaukee actually start to produce. The Brook Lopez had a slow game in the last one. Bobby Portis had a mediocre game in the last one. Gary Trent, you know, not clicking so far in Milwaukee, but he's probably more a symptom of the main cause than anything else. But that's where I'm personally watching to see if these guys can get it together and start, you know, getting up and above the cut line in the case of guys like Gary Trent. And then on the Cleveland side, the only thing I think I'm watching out for is really Jared Allen. And Jared Allen, who's been super great right out the chute, a couple mediocre nights himself, hard to complain when they're sort of bashing teams over the head, but 7-0 Cleveland, that's the only thing that I find interesting there, other than counting the Evan Mobley stats that are on most of my teams. That I actually get up for. The game after that, we've got the Lakers at Detroit. If there's a spot for the Lakers to kind of chill out a little bit and not care so much. I mean, Anthony Davis is probable with a hip injury. As I said in the last show, this isn't something I'm super concerned about right now. I do think they're having fun playing basketball, and I think that that actually makes a difference for a LeBron team in the twilight of his career. You know, this could be a completely different picture if they start slow and things start to topple a little bit the wrong direction. I think that maybe you start seeing things like weird little absences for the key guys. But right now, I think they're having fun and they want to play. Austin Reeves is probable. So far, so good on that front. We have a ton of Austin Reeves on teams. I think we were out on front in front on Austin Reeves, and he's just been really a revelation. And he's going to just keep getting better. And so as long as he can stay healthy and upright, that's just going to be profit all year long. D'Angelo Russell also probable for this game. So all systems go. They're going to face a Detroit team that's slowly starting to get things pointed the right direction. I think Detroit is really excited to have a big game here. Do they have the horses? Well, they got Jalen Duren, who can match up with Anthony Davis pretty well. I don't think Anthony Davis is going to physically own the paint. That's a big deal, because that's kind of how he has had his resurgence, is he's physically owned the paint. And I don't think that's going to happen against Jalen Duren, who's the most built 19-20-year-old on the planet, perhaps. The rest of the roster might not be facing so much of a roadblock. LeBron doesn't really have anybody on the Detroit side that can slow him down, per se. Tobias Harris is definitely not that guy. Tobias Harris, this might be the night that he actually slows down, and that actually does not bode well for Detroit as they attempt to kind of get their season going the right way. But they've had good performances out of most of their younger players that they've wanted to do, wanted to see do well. So the momentum could be there for a Detroit win in this one. But if I had to guess, LA probably pulls this one out late. Nothing too interesting from a fantasy perspective in this game. The next game on the slate, Boston and Atlanta. Boston at 6-1 could be in a little bit of a cruise state. Jaylen Brown, I believe, is ruled out already for this one. We just get a double confirmation on that. Yep, out for this one. And they're kind of, if I had to guess, playing the game that any injury will put you on the shelf. And why not when you have depth? And Sam Hauser will be back for this one. So they'll be interested to see if he can finally hit the box score in a meaningful way. I've actually dumped Hauser in a lot of places. I think I've got him on a couple really big teams, you know, 200 plus player pool teams. But I kind of think he's a 150 guy. I think he's got some skills to do more than people know him for, which is shoot a lot of threes. So I'm watching for that. I'm also watching to see what happens at the center position. And if the unicornet, Luke Kornet, can come back after a really truly unicornet kind of a game, where I believe he had a steal, a block, and three, and like 7-7 from the foul line, 6-6 from the field, if I'm going off the top of my head there. It was probably the best line that he's going to have this season. So we'll be watching to see what happens there. On the Atlanta side, they're very banged up right now. You know, Bogey's out. DeAndre Hunter is week to week at this point. You know, little kind of injuries too that are working the edges. Kobe Bufkin, Vit Krejci. These guys are out. And so who on the Atlanta side is somebody that we can kind of get behind? And you know, all the main guys, you know, they're kind of obvious. Larry Nance got big minutes in the last one, 26 off the top of my head. And then who else got the minutes there? Sorry, as I have like five distractions at once hit me. It was my broad-shouldered friend. I'll get that in a quick second here. Also of note on this team, as my internet decides to slow me down here, give me 1 second here as I get fixed up. Thank you very much for your patience. Nothing like dead air to start a show. Roddy at 26 minutes, 8 points, 3 boards, 3 assists in the last one. No steals, no blocks. He did have 2 threes. I just like watching the guy play basketball. One player that was interesting that I'm kind of curious if in deeper formats can be a thing, Keaton Wallace, 6 points, 3 of 7 shooting. And that's just more of a deep league question more than anything. I don't actually, even with Nance, I'd be concerned about firing Nance up. We don't know the status of a Kongwu right now. And Andre, if you can do a little check for me on that, see if there's any update there, that would be helpful. But Risa Shea, if he can get going, he's had a couple of interesting lines lately, a couple defensive lines. He had 3 steals in the last one. He's got 1 triple to go with those 3 steals, a very muted 11 points, 5 rebounds. Otherwise, he had a bunch of defensive stats in the prior game and not so many on the offensive side. So he's sort of trying to figure it out right now. He's got all the opportunity in the world. I kind of think he's a 150 guy in the upcoming stretch. And then can he kind of parlay that into something better? You know, 125. Can he keep taking steps forward as the year goes on? Otherwise, it's going to be Trey Young, Jalen Johnson, Dyson Daniels. Dyson on a little bit of a minutes limit. That's just something for everybody to keep an eye out for. I don't know if he has the minutes limit for this game. That minutes limit wasn't exactly shouted from the top of mountaintops heading into the last game, but it was a 24-minute limit. He got 25 minutes in this game. So if he can, I don't know if it matters. I don't know if he's getting 30-plus, if he's breaking the bank in the box score. I think if you have Dyson Daniels on a team, you'd rather him be healthy at this stage of the year rather than rooting for more minutes. So if he does have 26 minutes, it might not actually be a bad thing for his overall value. But that's what I'm watching for in that game. Memphis and Brooklyn. I'll quickly just check and see any news that's popped up. We got a Robert Williams III's been upgraded to probable. That's interesting. Perhaps, and I'll just skip to the Portland picture real quick. The Klingon stuff, this might take a back seat while they see what they have in Robert Williams. And that will be interesting. I don't know what they will have in Robert Williams as I scroll on down and see if there's anything else pertaining to that. There's not. No additional intel there. I would say you might just see Klingon take a quick back seat while they get Robert Williams, get his feet wet, you know, give him 10 minutes a game here and there, and really prep him to be possibly traded. This is going to be a showcase moment for him. And hopefully he can do something. You know, if he can put together some good film and maybe a contender that needs a big decides to take the plunge, but it's not going to matter too much other than I do think if he plays, it's going to slow Klingon, who's not been moving all that fast, both in reality or fantasy. I mean, some impressive per minute stuff that's fun to track. You know, it's fun when somebody plays 10 minutes, gets 10 rebounds and blocks 2 shots. It's like, what if he played 30 minutes? But obviously things change when that happens. Kongwu not on the injury report. So that I'm personally watching. I have a Kongwu in a couple places. Didn't go over the moon with a Kongwu this year, but as we were looking for centers late, you know, most of us, a Kongwu was definitely an option to consider. And it's been a bit of a slow start. And we want to see this foot thing, this toe injury, be a thing of the past. So we can really truly see, will he have the breakout moment that everybody's been waiting for like, I don't know, 5 million years now, it feels like. Next up on the slate, Grizzlies in Brooklyn. Grizzlies in Brooklyn, Memphis favored by 5.5 on the road. Brooklyn not getting any respect despite a 3-4 record, and they've been playing decent ball. They struggled last night. This is the back-to-back. Memphis trying to, you know, get some rhythm and some rotation to, you know, kind of an uneven start. Though they're at 4-3, I doubt anybody's complaining in Memphis about a 4-3 start with the way things have gone down. I mean, other than Scottie Pippen Jr., who I'll probably be watching every game for the rest of the year, and I, as I said in the last show, I've issued a do not drop on Scottie Pippen. I just want to see Ja Morant play with some consistency. I want to see if Jaren Jackson has some consistency in the defensive stats. He's been pretty good so far this year, but a couple games where he doesn't show up and a lot of wobbly minutes for him as he gets up to speed following a preseason hamstring issue. So that will be the agenda for me. And of course, Santi Aldama, can he keep it going? And we talked a lot about him in the last show. And I don't want to stop the show for all of that. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that for the Memphis Grizzlies. As far as Brooklyn Nets goes, no, I'm just having some fun with producer Andre Limosh there. As far as the Brooklyn Nets go, there was some serious dips for Cam Thomas and Dennis Schroeder in the last game. And I want to see, do these guys respond? Do they respond? Or is this a bad spot for them to respond in the back-to-back against a team that's got some guys missing and guys not playing well? And, you know, yeah, that takes a little bit of the teeth out of the Grizzlies. But the Grizzlies have a lot to prove. And I think they got a lot of players like Scottie Pippen Jr. that aren't about to be called replacement players. I think Scottie Pippen Jr. is there for the long haul. I think he's, you know, a guy that is going to play the game tough. I think there's enough players on the Grizzlies side to play the game tough. What happens with Cam Thomas? What happens with Dennis Schroeder? They don't have a lot of room to be bad in the beginning of the year, because this is when they're supposed to be really, really good. And for the most part, they have been. And that's why the Nets are 3-4. So that's, and maybe some Noah Clowney. I know that he's popped up on the injury report. That's not probably the game to measure, but at least it's on my radar. I want to see why Clowney hasn't done anything this year. I didn't get a lot of Clowney anywhere. Everybody was higher there, so that's fine. But I'm curious. He's legitimately a talented basketball player playing on a team. And want to see if they end up starting Claxton, if Claxton can get some consistency going, because I didn't avoid Claxton because I thought he was bad all the way. I avoided him because of the tanking and because of the injury risk and because of the things that have really kicked in early here. But, you know, he's supposed to be pretty good. He's supposed to be a guy that they want to get the ball. So can he start getting the ball is something that I'm watching for there. Utah at Chicago is the next stop for us. Utah at Chicago. Chicago is interesting because of the three games this week. So you can really, if you want to try to get in on Ayo Dosunmu, if you want to try to get in on Jalen Smith, I think those are the two players that I've coalesced around. Like Jalen Smith, been on the injury report so far this season. I don't think anybody's diving, you know, to the waiver wire right now to get Jalen Smith. You know, if you're in a one center league, you probably don't even care. If you're in a two center league, you probably do care. And if you're, you know, looking for some upside in a deeper league, you definitely care, because this is a guy who finally cut free of the chaos in Indiana, has had a decent per minute production, not perfect, but decent. And he gets cut loose to Chicago that may or may not want to go, you know, let Nick Vucevic do something else. Or if things went really bad in Chicago down the stretch, Nick Vucevic might be deprioritized. Therefore, Jalen Green becomes, you know, great in that respect. Three games in 4 days. Now, Jalen Smith has been on the injury report, and so far, he looks like he's playing in this game. Three games in four nights might be a little bit too much for him. If he has knee issues, if he's really truly limited by injury, if this is the reason that he hasn't really caught on in the league, if this is, you know, the kind of the why behind the why, maybe he only plays in two of the three games this week. That would be a concern of mine if I'm going to take a chance on him based on having an additional game this week. But you know what? I like to get a marker down on a player that's got low minutes now and is somewhat productive in those minutes with the chance of getting better production should the event, whatever it may be, occur. Now, I do think with Jalen Smith, the event is not happening for at least a month or two. So he really does need to be good in his limited minutes for all of this to pan out. He has had good moments on the floor this season. The injury stuff has sort of taken away from that. So that's one question that I have with this game. And then Dosunmu has just been good, not great. And he's light in some key areas statistically, but he's a live body. He's somebody that's in the Bulls' plans, somebody that's going to get big minutes all season, sort of regardless of what's going on around them. And at some point in time, they may ask him to do a little bit more. It's probably not anytime soon, but in a three-game stretch, if, you know, something was to happen to Zach LaVine, who, by the way, I believe is still questionable for this game, If Zach LaVine suddenly, you know, he looks great now, but, you know, this is the thing with injuries. They happen and then they don't look good anymore. If he gets dinged up or moved or whatever the hell happens with him, you know, you start looking down roster. Dosunmu becomes the third ball handler in that group. And I don't think anything's going to happen with Giddey, and I don't think anything's going to happen with Kobe White this season, but he might be way more productive in that third role, that third ball handling role, and get a couple more reps on the ball and have a little bit more versatility in his stat line than he has right now. So you get three games right now. If you want to try to check into that in a deeper format, that's what I got in the Chicago Bulls side that's interesting to me. Okay, let's move this along and see who pops up next on the grid. New York at Houston. That's a fun one. I think with New York and Houston, we're going to get a real good measurement on Şengün. And I know a lot of people right now are talking about Şengün because he's only averaging just under 6 minutes per game in the fourth quarter. He watched the entire fourth quarter in the last game. He played 21 minutes in the last game. There's a lot of talk about his offensive game not really clicking right now. And it feels like other players may not be clicking right now because the overall team concept in its totality is not clicking right now. And that's fine. I think they'll get it worked out. But you didn't draft Şengün to be playing 21 minutes per game. A lot of people drafted Şengün in the second round, believe it or not. I was not one of them. If I would have drafted Şengün, it would have been in the fourth round, maybe the fifth, depending on the format. And that's fine. I'm lower than most on Şengün. That said, this type of a game, it's at home. You got a big name team in the Knicks coming in. And you got usually what happens is a bounce back. And that is kind of what I think will happen tonight. I think that they'll say, we want to make sure that Alpi doesn't get too far down in the dumps. And I think this is a good matchup in terms of Karl Anthony Towns being the type of player that's going to foul a lot. I think Alpi will draw a lot of fouls. And I think it actually feeds into the game plan to have Alpi go big against Karl Anthony Towns. So I think what I will be watching for is if this expectation does not hit, if he doesn't have a big game against the Knicks and Cat, and he doesn't sort of reclaim his role as offensive leader of this team, and if his teammates don't have a rising of the tides, because Fred VanVleet can't hit the broadside of a barn right now. Jalen Green had a 2 of 11 shooting night in the last one. You know, the Jabari Smith comments from Ime Udoka about the good thing about Alpi being off the floor is we can get Jabari going. Well, I think they want to get Jabari going. And I don't care at the end of the day if it's Alpi on the floor or somebody else on the floor that's doing it. So if he doesn't have a big game here, then I think there might be signs of greater concern. As of right now, I would not take my valuation of Alperen Şengün and change it. I think that he is exactly where he's supposed to be. I just think that expectations, as usual with him, were cranked a little bit too high. So, okay. I think that's all I'm watching for on the Houston side, I think. Although, I buried the lead previously in the other show, is Tari Eason. Okay, dude, you had a 10 cash counting stat night in something like 30 minutes off of the bench. Can you do it again? Amen Thompson, consistency, please. We know the talent's there. We know that the fit is there. Can we get some consistency? And it might not even be his issue. It just might be, can he get the minutes to have the consistency? He had a great game in the last one. I want to see those great games continue. I had a massive ranking for him in the B150. A lot of steals, so I wasn't able to get as much of him as I'd like because there's so many steals. Sometimes you got to kind of not get your own guys because you have too many steals. That's what happened with him. That's why he's not on like every single one of my teams. And he also was a little bit of a buzzy name. So, you know, I had to pass. But I had him ranked in the top 50 because he's that good. And he's that important to that Houston Rockets squad. So I'll be watching for that. And then on the Knicks side, the stars have gotten their game back in the right place. Brunson, Cat, productive again. Downstream, Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, everybody productive. Let's just see if they can keep that going. Next up, Chicago at Minnesota. Man, I ranted on the last show about Julius Randle. I'll do it again right here. That trade is going to leave a mark. And I guess I'll just stop there because I don't want to do the same rant. It's, it's bad for business. It's bad for the box score. It's bad for guys like Dante DiVincenzo. The good news for all of that bad news, and aside from the fact that finally in court, the fight is proceeding for ownership of this squad, that is low-key as important as anything else that's going on for this basketball team. I don't think the Julius Randle trade would have been made, though I might be wrong. I might be wrong. I don't know if that trade gets made if ownership is figured out. I got some discipline, Andre, some discipline, barely. But yeah, I'm not going into that rant again. But the Hornets are kind of a stat factory, whether it's they themselves or the opposing squad. So I would love to see Anthony Edwards go off. I want to see Julius Randle go off. Go off. You know you're going to go off. Just go off and maybe, you know, everybody can get better some other way. But if the Minnesota guys, Dante DiVincenzo, probably more importantly, Dante DiVincenzo, if he doesn't go off, you know, it's going to annoy me. I'm not going to drop DiVincenzo, and I think nobody should drop him. I think he's a top 75 guy this season, maybe even with some upside beyond that. He's that good. It's just a weird fit. It's a weird situation. They'll learn as the season goes on how to play. I want to see him have a good game because Charlotte regularly gives up big games. They're banged up. They don't have a big man. I don't know what the update is hang on, I'm just scrolling to get the update. Update achieved. Yeah. Nick Richards still out. So no big man. Grant Williams really is going to have his hands full in this game. I think that this is a good game for Minnesota to get right. They're favored by 9.5 points. If they can't get right, it just means that they're just going to have more troubles than the troubles we thought they were going to have, but they're just going to keep happening. And I would personally like to see Minnesota start producing in the case of the Anthony Edwards and Dante DiVincenzo, which I have everywhere. Charlotte, you know, LaMelo, Miles Bridges has had a really slow couple of weeks. He's faced some big time defenders, probably gets another significant, weight challenge in the form of Julius Randle. If Randle does indeed draw the assignment there, so he can't just bully his way. He's faced a lot of guys that are physically good matchups for him. So that slow lull that you've seen in the statistical project or productivity there for Bridges might continue, but at some point in time, it needs to not continue, or we're looking at a different version of Bridges, and rather than like the top 40, 50 version that he was drafted to be. I think that's all I have on the Charlotte side, other than it would be great to get a Mark Williams update. Don't know how I found myself in Mark Williams land this season, but I did. Great to get an update there. Next up on the docket, we got India Dallas, and this game, we got to see what's up. Like, is Tyrese Halliburton going to have a big moment? And it's really, it's asking a lot. And I actually had this question in the earlier show, if they played on the road or at home. Well, it looks like they play on the road, and they've got Dallas at 4-2, who's 5.5 point favorite. Dallas, I think that building, that team, I think they're just pumped up. I think that they're going to come and play this one hard. And this might be bad news for Indy, who does not have a backup big man right now. And they're looking at probably playing Obi Toppin some significant minutes at center, if you want to call it that. And Jairus Walker coming in. I wouldn't be surprised if you hear of a signing in Indiana, to get some sort of big man sitting on the couch waiting for a phone call to come in and play 10 minutes off of the bench. I think Obi Toppin is probably a pickup. And if anything, it's because at times he has some pop. It's usually short-lived, pardon me. And it's like 2 to 3 game stretches where he hits, say, more than 2 3-pointers and the efficiency is great. And then you kind of get some other goodies along with it. And Obi Toppin looks like a standard league guy. Then usually falls into the muck that is the rotation in Indiana, and then it kind of goes away and everybody wishes they hadn't participated in the whole thing. Now it's a little bit different. I think that his minutes by default need to kind of stay north of 20. He's been a top 150, 175 guy in about 20 minutes for a long time now. So kind of by rule, if he gets about 22 to 24 minutes, I think he starts flirting with that, you know, low high I'm always talking about, where you can get the low end production. And then maybe if something happens, I mean, Miles Turner is not exactly a spring chicken. He's not exactly a guy that's proven to be healthy, and it's not exactly a guy that they want to play big minutes. Maybe they throw caution to the wind and let Miles Turner go for 30-plus minutes a game for some long stretch, and Miles Turner all of a sudden starts being extraordinarily productive in fantasy leagues, and that sort of leaves Obi Toppin on the sideline. But no, I think that they're just going to keep playing him 27 minutes a game, start playing a ton of small lineups. This actually could be maybe even as important for the entire squad, because at some level you might have to commit. If you're Indiana, we're never going to beat you slowly. We're never going to beat you with interior strength. We are going to run, and we're going to run, and we're going to run, and we're going to run some more. And at the tip of that spear necessarily has to be Tyrese Haliburton. And he's sitting on a ton of games that just scream underconfidence or overconfidence, depending on how you want to look at it. Like, did Tyrese Haliburton read his own press clippings this offseason? Did Tyrese Haliburton forget that he's one of the better guards in the league? What it is? I don't know. All I know is that it's manifested itself in a lot of bricks when it matters most, and a lot of shaking his head, and a lot of turnovers when it, you know, the kind of stuff that we saw at times late in the playoffs last year, when you're like, ah, I can't believe you're supposed to be the big time decision maker, and you're making that decision right there. So it's a big wake up call time. And I do think at 2-4 with their backs against the wall, sorry, I'm spending a lot of time on this game here, but I think that Indy, you might see one of their more desperate efforts in this game. Desperate efforts. And Tyrese Haliburton, he's on everybody's minds right now. Anybody that took Tyrese Haliburton is waiting. It's waiting for it to be okay. And it's a buy low moment, as I said in the last show. It's definitely a buy low moment. But that's the story. And then also Neesmith. I don't know if we have an update on Neesmith. I'm going to quickly look at the injury page on sportsethos.com, which is up to date and gives you a quick glimpse of everything. And Neesmith not on the injury report. So to me, he's actually a stronger play. And I'm burying the lead there. He's a stronger play than Obi Toppin. But Toppin's the one that's more available, I believe. I don't know. Maybe the Yahoo numbers are wrong. But generally speaking, I think people understand that Neesmith, when he's getting fullish run, is a top 100 guy in a 9-cat league, whereas Obi Toppin is more back toward the 150, 175 range. So I like Neesmith. Oh, wait. No, he is out for Monday. Sorry, I can't read, guys. Neesmith already out. So we'll find out about him. And he low-key might be the guy that's available on the waiver wire because of that. So if you're wondering about rankings, I got Neesmith over Obi Toppin. Okay, Dallas side, Will Clay hit a bunch of threes. That's all I got for you there. Let's see here. Moving on to the next game on the docket. I believe that's Orlando at OKC. I end up skipping one here. My apologies. Somebody let me know. Orlando at OKC. Orlando, what's happening in the wake of the Wendell Carter Jr. stuff? Goga Bitadze is active and available, and I kind of wonder if this is just sort of their rotation in a nutshell. One guy's hurt, okay, so now you're active again. Dealing with his own stuff, of course. But Goga and Mo Wagner, we've seen this show before. We've seen Goga get productive for 5-game stretches and then sort of disappear. Wagner's a little bit of a different flavor. Like, he's got like low-end productivity sort of no matter what. Even if he gets 17 minutes, he's going to kind of give you that top 150, 175 number. And if he gets 20 minutes, then maybe it'll be 125 to 150, you know, and not much more. And some susceptibility to some bad lines, because he's really only a scorer and a free throw guy and a field goal percentage guy. And that's pretty much it. You might get a little bit of something else here and there. I'm not over the moon grabbing Wagner. If you're in a deep league and you need a center, I think that actually this altogether, we don't know the severity of the Wendell Carter Jr. stuff, but if it's going to be a bit, I think Wagner will be a top 150 guy for however long that's going to be. So that might be valuable for some of you guys in your leagues. And I certainly saw it in a lot of leagues that I'm playing in. Watching for that, watching for KCP to see if he can get going. I want to see if the efficiency issues continue to hit Franz Wagner. And then, of course, the Jalen Suggs show. Is he just going to be dynamite all season long? He had a little bit of a slowdown. I don't know if folks are getting the itch to go sell high here. I think a sell high move is certainly fine. It definitely, it's by the book. He's an injury risk in past seasons. I think he might have turned the corner on some of that stuff. It might just be the case that Jalen Suggs is very good, and that might be the case. But the numbers were very, very big. These were not Jalen Suggs numbers. So that's probably the pretext for more of a sell, is just hitting the high point and getting out of Dodge. But we'll find out a lot in this one, because OKC wrecks a box score like nobody's business. They're 6-0. And you should know that when you're planning for your Orlando plays, that the Thunder have wrecked almost every box score that they've been a part of. I only want to know, can like Dort and Caruso, maybe Aaron Wiggins, can they carve a lane out in fantasy? It feels like Dort and Caruso have fallen underneath the cut line, with Wiggins peeking up and saying hello, but I think he'll be under the cut line as well. But can Dort or Caruso get it going is what I want to see there. And other than that, I just like to see big stat lines, and I'm sure we'll get that out of most of the Thunder guys. Moving into Toronto at Denver, aside from Mogmo Mania, which I will be definitely locked in on, what I do want to see is a Denver Nuggets squad that looks like they're enjoying playing basketball. We'll watch and see if Russell Westbrook can have anything other than a 2-of-11 clunker with a bunch of goodies elsewhere, because he'll get the goodies. He'll get the assists. He'll get you some defensive stats somewhere in there, some rebounds, but you know, everything else totally up for grabs. But will he continue to be kind of a downer for that team? Christian Brown, that dunk, holy moly, that dunk on Rudy Gobert the other day. I didn't realize that Christian Brown had those kinds of issues. Like the anger coming out of that gentleman after he dunked, that powers that man. And he is a bad, 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 bad man. He is going to rise and fire. He's going to yam on you. He's going to defend. And it looks like he can make shots now. And he's definitely a 125 at minimum going forward. So that'll be fun to just sort of get confirmation on as we go throughout the season. But there's going to be big lines as well. So maybe that looks more like 100 or even 75 as we go. I'm not even really watching the two other youngsters, Julian Strother and Peyton Watson. They're just kind of off the radar for now. It's the Christian Brown show. And on the Raptors side, just to kind of clean that up a little bit, they got a lot of action on this roster right now. I mean, Barrett's back. He'll probably get a ton of volume in this game. It might not work out so well for him. And then, of course, Bobo's getting minutes. And Chris Boucher has been productive, not just in the last game, but sort of under the radar for the entire season. Can he keep that going against a premium team in a premium environment? I'll say the answer is no. So he'll probably stay beneath the cut line for most of you guys out there, but I'll be watching that. You know, even guys like Sheed at the bottom of the roster, you know, there's a lot of Abaji, actually. There's a lot of talent on this team, and it's not quite yet manifest itself in fantasy value. Abaji had a huge game in the last one. If he can give you, say, three or more steals, blocks, and threes in this game, I think he's going to get a lot of attention as an ad. Not just for short-term value with Quickly out and, you know, whatever's happening on the day-to-day with this squad, but sort of them saying, all right, he's our guy. We're anchoring to him. It'll be up. It'll be down. But if he's getting you both defensive stats and three-pointers and the efficiencies aren't terrible, that's starting to be standard league value. And I don't think the market's really caught up about that. Let's move it into Philly at Phoenix. We've got ourselves all sorts of palace intrigue. No shortage of that. Will Joel Embiid sock anybody? Plus 450. I don't know. I think he's probably going to have a few people in between he and reporters. And the good news is it's in Phoenix. So that one guy that did all that unethical stuff, he probably won't be there. And I doubt they're going to fly him to Phoenix. I just have a hunch. But, you know, seriousness, all kidding aside, Paul George, probably a lock to play in this game. That's good. We'll see what that does to the rotation. He's a pretty complimentary player. I don't think that this is going to slow down Tyrese Maxey or anything like that. Always integrating a player who's got that much usage is always going to take a toll. But again, I think this is a complimentary situation. The Phoenix Suns probably aren't the best spot to bring him back, but you're not going to wait and not bring him back against this squad. They got a lot of length that they can put on Paul George and players that can sort of give him a little bit of hell. I think both of the three stars can give him a little hell. So it'll probably be a slow night for Paul George and maybe just a low minute night, even maybe something in the 24 minute range. Wouldn't go over the moon trying to get Paul George back in the lineups. It's probably a fine thing to do. He'll probably be of startable value, but just keep your expectations in check there. The Andre Drummond stuff, I think you're probably going to want to start to get whatever you can for Drummond, because I do think that Embiid has a fire lit underneath him, and he'll probably be back within the next 2 weeks. It's just sort of my dart throw, I'm guessing, in the Joel Embiid game, which take that with as much salt as you can get. I don't think there's anything else that I'm really watching for in Philly land. So maybe it'll come to me as I talk about Phoenix. But Phoenix-wise, Grayson Allen is criminally under-rostered in fantasy leagues. There's drop questions that probably shouldn't exist. There's add questions that are a little too soft. Maybe Grayson Allen's not, you know, the top 40 guy he was last year. I have him a top 75 guy this year. He had a kid. He had an Achilles issue. For some reason, he decided to work out like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's like legitimately a linebacker this year. All very weird, untimely stuff for the beginning of the year. We don't know, is this weight gain going to impact him? It's coming off of a game when he gave you 7 cash counting stats, 3 blocks and 4 threes, I believe, in 19 minutes. I don't think the addition of Tyus Jones would take a guy that you paid in Grayson Allen and knock him beneath, say, 25 minutes per game. I think there's a great argument for him to play 32 minutes per game. In those 32 minutes, if he plays, he will be very productive. Don't let Grayson Allen be available on your waiver wire is the lesson that I'm giving here today. I think that's it for this game. Let's move it into got my games mixed up here. Let's go to San Antonio and the Clippers. Did I somehow? Oh, no, and I got 2 games. I got 2 late games that ESPN thinks I like these 2 teams. And I kind of do. I like the Golden State Warriors. That's my childhood team that I grew up with. And then the Kings. I covered them for multiple years. So they're the team that shows up everywhere on my ESPN. So they're last. But we've got San Antonio and the Clippers. I get excited. I don't know. When I think of Wembanyama in various matchups, I just get excited. And that's great. And this team has 3 games in 4 days. And so this is great for those of us who have Julian Champagne everywhere. We're going to get to see 3 games and 4 nights from him. He's a great streamer option. I have him pegged at about a top 110 value, top 100 value this year in fantasy leagues over the long haul. That means if you're in a 12-team league, when round 7 is done and 94 players have been selected, he would be in the 8th round of value, theoretically. So Champagne, obviously, I'm high on him. I just think he's a guy that wins games, that plays well, and that he will rise above, you know, the noise in San Antonio. And when Devin Vassell comes back pretty much any day now, that'll get tested, and maybe he'll go down to 20 minutes, or maybe he'll go down to 24 minutes. And I think he's going to be a last option on the floor offensively most nights. And the good news is that's fine by him. He just shoots threes and makes them and makes the right plays, and that's why the coaches love him. And he'll be fine. So if you've been sitting on the fence with Champagne and you've seen some of these sort of lighter lines and some of these haven't been good matchups, he's been a 110 value this year. So there we go. You know, he's kind of already there. And this gives you a good opportunity to dip your toe in the water. If you're on the outside looking in and you're like, I don't think Brood knows what he's talking about here. 3 games, 4 nights, see what you get and see if he can ride the wave through the Vassell time and then just be a top 110 guy the rest of the way. And you know what? If he stays healthy and he's a 110 guy, he's going to have a top 75 finish if that happens. And hopefully that can be on your roster and not somebody else's. Other than that, the Chris Paul show got real good here real quick. I think people are asking themselves today, is Chris Paul a top 25 player? I think that's a question that flies into people's heads right now. It's not the answer. That's not the case. He's not a top 25 player. But we've seen him in the past reach up and be faded like that and then be a top 25 guy. I think top 50 is probably the more appropriate question. And then from there, the devil will be in the details. Can he stay on the floor? Can he actually keep this up? He was drafted at like 125 in a lot of leagues. And then here he goes doing Chris Paul stuff. We'll see it on display in his old neck of the woods, which is now a spaceship masquerading as a stadium, but I'm cool with it because it's awesome. And on the Clippers side, they got hit by Oklahoma City in the last one, though James Harden did get 3 steals, 3 blocks. That saved his night. But everybody else had sort of a somewhat depressed box score. Can Ivica Zubac get back on track? He's had an outstanding start. If he has another slow one in this game, and it's very possible he will against Victor Wembanyama and company, people might start to get a little antsy with Zubac, and I don't know. That's probably the time to try to go get Zubac, because there's nothing stopping Zubac from having a massive season this year. Or alternatively, is this the sign that, hey, he's more of a top 75 to 100 guy? There's going to be lulls. I kind of think it's the former. I'm having a little bit of buyer's remorse not ranking him higher and not prioritizing him higher to have at least a little bit more position than I've got. I haven't had him as a good season. I didn't have him as a great season. I think most people had him as a great season, and that's why he's on their rosters and not mine. Sad. I know. Can't get them all right. I'll be watching out for that, and I believe that's it. I mean, unless we want to get into the bottom of the roster, and I don't, because we've got two more games to go here, one of which will be the Kings and one of which will be the Warriors. Let's go to the Warriors first. They got the Wizards, who, as mentioned, only have one game in the next four days. So there's nobody really that we're kind of trying out for a test run there. I think that the main players that you're interested in, I kind of want to watch Sar. I want to see, can Sar keep it going? I think Sar has been way better than expectations. I think it's a classic case of do not overweight the summer league. You know, the role, the position, the kind of situation of everything that's involved. This is more important. They want Sar on the floor for a minimum 20 minutes a game, 25 minutes a game. And the question was he going to block shots? And that really shouldn't have been a question. I think the question that we all sort of had caused us to rank him low is he going to crush your efficiency because he can't hit the broadside of a barn? Well, he's been hitting the broadside of the barn. So he's kind of got that box checked. It's, if he's hitting shots, if he's not completely unplayable for some reason, and I think people saw the shot in the preseason, probably the summer league, and then all the bad juju that came with that, and they kind of questioned, like, is it possible that this guy doesn't get on the floor? And Jonas Valanciunas. Well, Jonas Valanciunas is getting his 20 minutes. Okay. You know, that's not blocking Alexander Sarr. Sarr has gone out there and he's done his job. Now it's 2 weeks in. Will this change? I don't think so, but it's fun to watch because he has this kind of delectable stat set of blocks. He's going to shoot some threes. Can he keep the efficiency in check? Can he get you some rebounds? Can he just be a big enough defensive menace out there that he starts adding steals to the equation? I mean, you start to get the outlines of a top 75 guy here, and he was 125. I think people were drafting him based on name, not on projection. And that's another one that I wish I'd been more aggressive on. So watching for Sar, watching for the usual suspects, which is Jordan Poole, you know, in a return, or not return, but a revenge game against his old team. I bet you the Warriors D up there and don't let him have a big game. So you might want to just know about that before it happens. On the Warriors side, I don't think DeAnthony Melton's playing probably soonish. It does feel like Steph will play in this one. It's the Wizards, so they probably can buy a game off. And the Warriors, by the way, are 5-1. So that gives them a lot of extra breathing room where they probably wouldn't have had that. Buddy Hield appears to be the Buddy Hield that we thought he could be and that he's always been. Talked about that in the last show. Won't go deep there, but if he could keep his foot on the gas, and you just happen to have him on draft day, you could be looking at a top 50 guy that you got for 140, 150. So we'll be watching out to see Brandon Pajemski. Can he have a big game? This is a bad team in the Wizards, and he has only had like one big game this season. He needs a big game in the worst way, because I think his fantasy GMs are quite pissed off right now. And then can Andrew Wiggins kind of get things right? Of course, we're watching Kuminga. Of course, we're watching sort of the center position and Trayce Jackson-Davis and trying to figure out, are they going to give him more minutes there? There's lots of questions for the Warriors, not limited to just whether or not Steph Curry will play. But I kind of think he will play in this game because he just wants to get back out on the floor. And then in the Sac Miami game, Keon Ellis alert. Talked about that a lot everywhere. We don't need to talk about that so much. He's been doing fine, and it can only get better from here. On the Miami side, Bam Adebayo. Will he feast against a Domantas Sabonis led team? I don't know if that's the factor here, but he's got a big game under his belt and he needs another one. If not, you know, for that, he would be a major target of the ire of his fantasy GMs. Will Sacramento have anything happen with the De'Aaron Fox finger thing? He went 0-for-11 from three. And of course we have a ton of Fox everywhere. If there is a shooting concern there, and I don't think there is, it might show up again in a game like this, or alternatively, he might just go nuclear, and that will be that. On the Miami side, can we get a little bit more out of Jimmy Butler? As, you know, so far, so good on that front. And they're a fairly boring fantasy squad. You know what's not boring? Answering premium members' questions. All right. Let's do this. I got a question from a Brandon Barassa. Punt, free throw, and three-pointers made. Would you trade Porter Jr. for Sarr or Brown for Sarr? Well, I would trade Kevin Porter Jr. for Sarr in an instant, even though I do believe Kevin Porter Jr. will continue to play more and produce more as the year goes on. I don't think, and I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong, Clippers, I don't think they care about the off-court stuff. I think they're going to slowly ramp them up as the season goes on, and that's going to be that. And so you guys can put that in your pipe and smoke it however you want to smoke. Oh, is it Michael Porter Jr.? I'm so sorry. Well, you got a Kevin Porter Jr. take in there for you. Michael Porter Jr., that makes more sense, actually. I have Sarr as, like, criminally undervalued, and I think that's what happened there. Let's do it this way. Michael Porter Jr. for Sarr. No, I would not do that. I think Michael Porter Jr. is going to be, in you're punting free throws and you're punting three-pointers made. That actually does hit them. It hits Porter significantly. It actually hits Sarr a little bit as well, but I would still go Porter Jr., Michael Porter Jr. He's just going to be a consistent piece of what Denver's trying to do. You know that. It feels like the injury concerns are mostly behind us. I also think that they're going to just rely on Porter Jr. a lot this season. I mean, you're already going to see a lot more of that with however long Jamal Murray's out. And he was shooting today pretty aggressively. So I think this concussion thing is maybe a game, maybe two games, and he'll be cleared in no time. But that's just, you know, that's just one thing, right? Like, Murray's got plenty of things to overcome this upcoming season. And Porter Jr., to me, feels like the rock. So I'm not going to trade Michael Porter Jr. for Sarr. Christian Brown for Sarr? Maybe. I think if you do this deal, tried to hit the mute button to dump that, but no dice. If you do this deal, you're doing it for upside and that's it. Because Brown, yeah, three-pointers are part of his value proposition, and the same thing for Sarr. I don't think the difference is going to be that tight, or probably that it's going to be similar-ish. Not enough to tilt this deal. Sarr, it's going to be a bumpy ride. Whereas with Brown, I think you're going to know what you're getting every single night, and you can plan around that, and you can address other positions. So unless you want to shoot the moon with this thing, I would hang on to Brown. Got another question from Tyler. Looking to boost games played and a little bit of a steals/rebounding this week. So he wanted to push some steals and rebounding onto the board. How would you rate these pickups for some folks starting to play Wednesday/Thursday back-to-back? Looking for guys who are going Thursday and Saturday to add some games from the hugely packed days. My options: Denny Avdija, Julian Champagny, or Patrick Williams. We'll likely be dropping pods when Steph comes back, and potentially Jordan Hawkins if he is hurt. Basically not going to play since he's only available on packed days. All right. I love it. You're thinking this through. And all of the thoughts are in the right place. Very good. So Avdija projects to be a top 80 guy sort of the rest of the way. He's your top pickup out of this group. I love myself some Julian Champagny, but he's not at that level. Steals, rebounding, he does that. So therefore, I think the order of your pickup potential here is definitely as you have them listed, which is Avdija, Champagny, and then Pat Williams. I don't know if it's ever going to happen for him. I don't think we should be planning as if it's ever going to happen for him, and that's going to be that. As far as your drops, dropping pods for Avdija, all good. I could even theoretically get behind a drop of Champagny, or probably a drop of pods for Champagny. I would say you could probably work that out a different way and hang on to pods and figure out a way to get Champagny, especially with Vassell coming back and there being a good likelihood that you can get Champagne at a later time, probably wouldn't do the drop of Pods in that case. And then Hawkins, I mean, you've got a really small window here for Hawkins to be productive. It almost feels as if he might see his way through that and keep being productive, but that's very optimistic, not necessarily responsible thinking as far as the ad drop question goes. So if you think Hawkins isn't going to play, I think this is a good opportunity to get on Champagne and take the three games and get out of the Hawkins business if you're sure that he's not going to play. But that said, I don't know what the delta is on that. I think you're gaining just a game on Champagne in that respect. So maybe you can time this a certain way. If Champagne's not going to be in your lineup, I think you could probably hang on to Hawkins, get the next 2 weeks of value under your belt, maybe package him in a deal. So that's a lot of info for this one question. But Denny, for sure, Champagne, look into the details there. If you can't get added games out of it, if you can't take advantage of the schedule, ride out Hawkins and see if you can get a trade asset going. Brandon Barassa asks, Curry coming off IL, do I drop Valanciunas, Nick Richards, or Mike Conley? Ooh, this is an interesting one. I like this one because the Mike Conley conversation it's tough, it's brutal. And I think if you've watched Minnesota basketball long enough, you know that this team has lived and died by Mike Conley's presence. If Mike Conley's playing, they're good. When Mike Conley came across in a trade, Minnesota was good. In comes Julius Randle. We all know how that was going to end. That happened. It is what it is. Now Conley on the outside looking in, really struggling. And I don't know if anybody cares in Minnesota. Like, I think that they're so invested in this move that they just made, even though it's not a long-term investment. Like, it's going to be like a third of the season before Conley maybe gets figured out within the context of this offense. If he does, he's a top 100 guy, maybe. Maybe he's a top 125 guy. Now, contrast that with Nick Richards, who's not playing, by the way. And I think that's where we got to go with this thing. Is Nick Richards really going to just be the man for Charlotte? And is it going to matter? Is Nick Richards going to be like a box guy? Is he going to get two blocks in a game? I don't think so. Maybe he'll be like a 1.3, 1.4 blocks guy. I'm just blanking on his name. The guy never plays. Anybody can get his name before I do. You win. Guy I have on all over my teams, Mark Williams. When Mark Williams comes back, Nick Richards is done, you know, fantasy-wise, for the most part. Williams is very much an injury risk. We just don't know what we don't know there. I think you get rid of Nick Richards here. And that way you hang on to Valanciunas as his sort of top 100 value goes. I think Valanciunas would be more valuable than Nick Richards. And that's why you drop Nick Richards there. Let's see. We got a question here that's off my screen. Let me quickly get it on the screen. Looks like we're into the rapid fire zone here. Yeah, here we go. Are these the Discord questions, Andre? I think these are the Discord questions. If they are, well, I'll just get the question out here on the board. Do I drop Mann for Carrington? Trey Mann for Bub Carrington, 14-team head-to-head 9-cat. That 9-cat's doing some heavy lifting in this equation. Carrington is going to turn the ball over a ton, and we don't know if the efficiencies are going to be there. If you can account for the turnover somehow in your build, I do think that Carrington is the play here. However, be ready for it to be messy. Be ready for the percentages to be a mess. Be ready for the game-to-game to be a mess. The problem with Trey Mann is if Brandon Miller's back, Trey Mann loses so much pop, and he's going to probably be better in 9-cat as a result of not having so many touches and on and on and on and on. But the drop in productivity for Mann means you could probably pick him up off of the wire and do this whole exercise all over again, but while having Carrington on your squad. And it's going to get better for Carrington as the year goes on. So I do like Carrington over Mann here. Next question. Should I put in a waiver request for Dick and drop Monk. Monk seems to have a longer-term path to production, but Dick seems to be lava hot. All right. Yeah, I mean, Monk with the longer-term path to production, what I think you're trying to say there is like that it's a long year and that Monk is going to be productive over the course of the year and all things equal. Monk, in my mind, I'll just take it to my opinion now, has a better stat set. And Grady Dick is kind of just now showing some versatility, but like, do we really buy it? I mean, he went an entire season with like 2 blocks for a guy that's like 6'9", 6'10". I think if you make the bet on Grady Dick, what you're basically saying is that the ups and the downs are going to be so much better than preseason projections that it takes that he finishes better than Monk. And Monk, if he stays healthy, will finish just inside of the top 100. So you're betting on a pretty big season for Grady Dick. And we don't have Emmanuel Quickley back. We don't know what they're going to do with, you know, anybody down the stretch. I mean, they might rest Grady Dick if it comes down to it. We don't know what that's going to look like. So with all of that said, I like Malik Monk. I don't think I'll have a lot of support for that position, but I would keep Malik Monk. And I do know that the Kings seriously plan on playing Malik Monk and seriously will keep the ball in his hands quite a bit this season. Next up, 12-team head-to-head ESPN points. Would you drop Christian Brown to stash Trey Murphy? Other drop options would be Eason or OG. Well, first of all, you're doing pretty good, because there's some interesting drop names there. The points part of this equation, I'm just going to kind of try to rank the points system that you're using as maybe not so important on the blocks and the steals, and maybe the percentages don't matter quite as much, even though a lot of head-to-head point systems do account for these sort of things. I think, you know, Trey Murphy will probably, in the months of December, January, February, and March, have more productivity, more points than Christian Brown. Not by a lot. I think with Murphy showing injury concerns and Christian Brown showing that he can be this good, and it's kind of not a question anymore that he can be this good. I mean, maybe he'll have a shooting dip at some point in time, but he's just going to be Christian Brown. I kind of like hanging on to Christian Brown here, and it's very, very against the grain because I've got a big rank on Trey Murphy, and I like Trey Murphy a lot. Again, these are category ranks, so it's not as relevant here. But your other drop options, Eason probably is your drop here. Though the productivity was on display as recently as last game in a points format with those other things not mattering as much, I think that Eason's your drop here. But it was fun to do the Christian Brown versus Trey Murphy thought experiment. I should probably read the entire question or at least take it into consideration before going on a long rant. Does Agbaji, next question that is, does Agbaji disappear when wraps are at full strength? Can he be a fantasy playoffs darling once the tank's rolling in full steam in Toronto? I think the last part of your question is the most relevant part of the question. Yes. When the tank is rolling, I guess my only question with Agbaji, the early line, I mean, things can change, but just watching this, might he be too good? And I don't know if they'll look at it that way. But I think the collection of young players that they have, if they just keep developing all season, and if you exclude the big three, if you say the big three are going to go down, say Grady Dick goes down, four of them aren't playing. The rest of the guys, I mean, they're bad as a team in this landscape of the NBA, but they're probably a lot better than Toronto wants them to be. I don't think that would cause Agbaji to get rested in that scenario, but that's literally, I don't go to, is he bad and they can win with him? I go to, is he too good? And they might not want that. But I think I like what's going on in Toronto right now. I think he will possibly disappear when the Raps are at full strength. That's where the heavy lifting for him actually comes in this time frame. When the Raps are at full strength, can he get you over three steals, blocks, and rebounds? Or probably steals, blocks, and threes. Can he get you over three of the money counting stats during that span? If he can go plus three, he will survive. He'll be a 125 guy, 150 guy, and then have all the upside after that. That's the only question for Abaji. Otherwise, I think he's going to be great all year long. Next question, does Caruso deserve another week in shallow leagues? Should we have cut him after last week? I think even in a nine-cat league, yours is a shallow league question. I would even say in a nine-cat, 12-team intermediate league, right? You know, middle-of-the-road league. I think Caruso is droppable in that format. So in your shallow format, absolutely droppable. And I don't know that you should have cut him last week. I think it was a good week to watch and see. But I do think even in a 12-team nine-cat league, there's a case to be made to drop him. Now, it might matter who the player involved is. Last question before we go rapid fire. Was Tari Eason's huge game more of a blip, or is it time for a consistent role and more consistent value? Yeah, I think Tari Eason plays, as mentioned in one of these episodes, I think he plays 18 minutes on a bad night, 23 minutes on a good night, and I think his production is pretty damn good on most nights, like late round. And I think that's fine. This is a blip. He's never going to have this game this year again. Like, that's not going to happen. Now, if a bunch of injuries hit and he was playing 28, 29 minutes a game and his body could handle it, would these things happen? Yeah, these types of things would happen. That, like, all the planets were aligned for him in this last one. He's going to be a late round guy the rest of the way. That's the easiest way to think about it, and don't worry about the day-to-day. Okay, rapid fire, even faster rapid fire. Let's have at it. Dante DiVincenzo has seen more burn the past couple games, but he's still not helping managers in shallow leagues. Should we practice patience or drop? 9-cat, 10-team, redraft. If droppable, who's an attractive pick replacement or pickup? Abaji or Risache? Do not drop. Neither of those guys would have even been close for the consideration there. Should managers hang on tight to Trey Mann or start to look elsewhere? I think we covered that a little bit just now, a second ago. Start to look elsewhere. That Brandon Miller thing is real and it's not going away. Will Scoot's minutes continue to slide? Or will they give him more court time as the season progresses? I got a guy in the Cam Dynasty who wants to figure that out with me. He wants to get Scoot from me. This is a team I inherited. I'll have to look at that question in more detail, but will his minutes continue to slide? No. They're just going to go up and down. It's going to be a little bit annoying. And that's kind of, you get what you pay for. That's what the story is going to be in Portland, is they're going to go all over the place. Always bet on Anthony Black, or was his 2 point, 2 assist, 6 turnover offering our unofficial sign to bail on him in 9-cat, 10 teams, 12 teams? I don't know if I'd had him in either of those formats, but yeah, you can bail on Anthony Black in those formats. I'm thinking more of 14, 16, 18, 20 team formats in very small windows when the Magic are banged up. So that's the story there. Would you drop Caruso to pick up Abaji in 9-cat? Yeah, I'd do that based on all the aforementioned comments. Now we're going to the much, 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 much faster rapid fire zone. We go to the live chat questions, reminding people to join Discord, get your questions answered a little bit faster. We also have a ton of pros in there answering questions, a ton of stuff going on in general, because it's so cool in Discord and Twitter is so weird sometimes. Like, not kidding. I was going to say I was kidding. I'm not. All right. Outlook on Kawhi from Soren Hedegaard Nielsen. Hopefully I got that somewhat right. Outlook on Kawhi. He can weather the storm and head-to-head. Playoffs in March is all that matter. Yeah, I mean, look, we're all guessing here. Even Ty Lue is guessing to some degree, though I would say his comments at least haven't been like the worst. You know, on a scale of 1 to 3, if 3 was the worst and 1 was the best, I think the comments coming out of Los Angeles, and all things considered, it's been about a 2. I think a 2. You got to see it out. You've been this far. Let's see what this looks like. I don't know what my own personal cut line is. I think it's probably like, I mean, I got Kawhi at 100, 90, 80. I think one league I got him at like 50 or 60 before the really bad news hit. And I don't know why I did that, but I'm not revisiting that here on this show. That those numbers, you know, especially the later ones, I think you got to kind of wait till like end of November before you consider a cut there. Especially in playoff formats. I think in playoff formats, you really got to kind of see this thing out. Neil Chabra asked, who should I drop to activate Steph Curry tonight? Candidates include Nurk Alerk, Pippen Jr., who I have a do not drop on, Peyton Pritchard, who is red hot, and Jaden Ivey. It's Nurk. I've been trying to tell people, and I'm not a big NERC guy, but I've been trying to tell people to exercise caution and patience and just remember the first five games are what they are, but it's NERC. I'm not a NERC guy, by the way. I just think 5-6 game measurement on a guy like that with a clear role, probably not the best time to measure, but with that crew that you got there, it's NERC. Mr. 101 asks, Robert Williams is probable. Do you think he has low end value worth a flyer and 2C9CAT16 teams? 2C, I don't know what that is, but 9CAT16 teams, I do know what that is. And I do think he's worth a flyer, right? Like, what if you get, you know, 18 minutes a game, you know, two blocks, you know, some decent little numbers there, and he's just showing off trying to get, you know, sent to another team. That could be useful in a 16 team league. Just, I don't get your hopes up and don't drop anybody of real value. Daniel Paisley asks, would you swap Allen? I guess that's Grayson Allen for Caruso or Dante DiVincenzo in 9CAT. That's a spicy question. I'll just put it to you this way. Caruso's on the way bottom of that list. And DiVincenzo, I'd have to look. I don't know which guy I have higher in the B150. I think it was Grayson Allen and then DiVincenzo. And so this injury stuff and the slow start, you know, like that's just sort of weirding everything out. But then the DiVincenzo stuff is more on the predictable, what happens when you bring Julius Randle into the equation, the first month's going to be bad side. I'll take Grayson Allen. Henny Mini asks, if I could trade Gobert for Bam, do I take it even if Gobert was better for my build last year? Punting, free throws, and threes. If I could trade Gobert for Bam, do I take it? Two players I don't like a lot. And punting-wise, I'm not even sure how the math works out on the free throw thing, because it could get so weird in Minnesota that you might see the reduction of free throws for Rudy Gobert, and that would take a bad thing away from the table, if that makes any sense. And with the threes, neither of these guys are shooting threes. So I'm going to take Bam as a player I like better. Crowder Clam Chowder asks, thoughts on Klay Thompson and Daniel Gafford on a 12-team 9CAT, also understanding their playoff schedule, two games. Are both of those guys two games? Yes. Okay. Got it. Klay Thompson, Daniel Gafford, because they're on the same team. Duh. I think Klay is just going to roll around at a top 125 level. You sell high when he's hot and then don't worry when he's down because he's going to come bouncing right back. Daniel Gafford, I've got him in the top 50, I believe, as a finish. C is for center. Thank you very much, Mr. 101. I should have gotten that. But, you know, I've talked a lot today. Brain's not necessarily working. We are done. Thank you guys very much for your tuning in. Thank you guys for your support. Hope you guys have a great week, a big basketball week. Everybody go out and do your civic duty and vote. This has been Fantasy NBA Today, presented by Bet Online, a Sports Ethos presentation. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, be well.